to Holden Village. Today's Monday, August 17th, 1998. And in Koinonia Fireside this evening, we have Louise Williams. Her session number is 98.5, and it's titled Images of Service, Washing Feet. Let's listen in.
Well, as I was saying, this is one of several presentations that I'm doing this week on images of service, and I'm taking those images from roles out of the history of the diaconate, deacons and deaconesses in the early church. And so it will be a little bit of talking about that, but mostly talking about our own Christian service and the Christian service that we both see and see need for in our places that we live and work. And I thought I would just, I guess I really haven't met most of you. I'm Louise Williams. I am a deaconess. I live in Valparaiso, Indiana. I'm director of the Lutheran Deaconess Association, and I have opportunity to be in touch with deacons, deaconesses, diaconal workers from all over the world because I'm on the executive committee of Diaconia, which is a world federation of diaconal associations. So some of the examples, I will try to pull in some of those ecumenical and worldwide experiences too. I wrote on the board here, I realize that sometimes I throw these terms around as if other people in the world use them as much as I do. But that first word, diaconia, is the Greek word that is translated in the New Testament, in the English New Testament, as service or ministry. And it's the word, of course, from which we derive deacon and deaconess. The word diaconal, or some people say diaconal, is just a word that means service-oriented. And then the diaconate really is the group of, or the made up of those people who are deacons and deaconesses. You've learned something already. Good. Hi, Amanda. Yeah, I'm glad you came. And you brought Anna. What we're going to do tonight is first talk about foot washing, and then we'll leave enough space at the end if anybody wants to wash feet or have your feet washed. I have some spaces set up in the next room that we can go do that, although we have so few people, we probably could just do it right here in this room. Hi, come on in.
Hi.
Hi. Foot washing may not be the best kind of contemporary image for service, but there certainly is no other picture of servanthood more vivid than that of Jesus in John 13, where Jesus washed the disciples' feet, and you probably all know the story well. Do you want to hear it read again? Would you like to hear it read again? Stephanie, who's up here last Monday, preached a wonderful sermon on this for the theme vespers on honoring the body and one of the practices in the Practicing Our Faith book. And she used this as one of her texts. So, Stephanie, why don't you chime in when whenever you want here. Now, before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray him. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robes, and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "You do not know now what I am doing, but later you will understand." Peter said to him, "You will never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no share in me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "One who has bathed does not need to wash except for the feet, but is entirely clean. And you are clean, though not all of you." For he knew who was to betray him. For this reason he said, "Not all of you." After he had washed their feet, had put on his robe, and had returned to the table, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have set you an example that you also should do as I have done to you." What strikes you about that passage? Anything?
It takes Jesus straight from where they thought him as being their leader into the ultimate servant, because it was the lowliest of servants that would wash your feet.
Yeah, okay. It was a real servant, the slave's task, really, to wash feet.
Humility.
Okay, the humility.
Do it to one another.
Okay, that humility, that very humble, slavely service, that really puts people in touch with kind of the maybe parts of one that you really would rather not touch, the blistered, becorned, dirty, smelly parts of humanity, so to speak. I think foot washing is kind of awkward work. And it puts you in a very vulnerable position. You can't get out of the way. You could be kicked. You're very vulnerable. And it's in response to a very real need. I was thinking as I was coming back from Heart Lake the other day when it was about 90 degrees, that if one really wanted to do some significant service to villagers, probably to set up a foot washing station down at the hike house would be the thing to do, and because we came back dusty and hot and with sore feet. But as you said, what makes this particularly stand out in such bold relief is that it was Jesus, who was called Master and Lord, who was doing the foot washing. Just leave that. And that particular account really has been the kind of touchstone for the diaconate in the church. And in fact, I didn't wear my deaconess pin, but if you can see the symbol, there's a basin on the chiro, on the crossbar of the chiro. And that the basin has long been a symbol of Christian service in the church. And from earliest times, deacons and deaconesses were really the people who were the focus of the church's care for the most vulnerable members of the community, the widows and orphans, the imprisoned, the poor. They visited those who were in need. They carried those concerns of those people back to the bishop to whom they were responsible, and to the congregation in prayer. And actually, in the liturgy, the prayer of the church traditionally was led by a deacon or deaconess who really were to gather the concerns of the people, of the whole community, and bring them to the congregation at worship. And in fact, in the ancient liturgies, in the old liturgies, that is called the deacon's prayer. They were the people who collected and dispensed alms that were gathered for the poor. And in fact, in the 3rd century, this story is perhaps legendary, but it's such a beautiful one, about a deacon, Lawrence of Rome, who took care of the offerings for the poor. And he had been arrested during the persecutions in the early church. He was arrested along with the bishop and the other people who worked in the congregation. But he wasn't immediately killed as the others were, but he was asked to go and he was kind of given a stay of execution while he went and brought the church's treasury to his persecutors. And the story goes that Lawrence is said to have gathered the poor, the lame, the blind, who had been in his care, and he presented them to his persecutors and said, "These are the true treasure of the church." And I don't know if it's a true story or not, but it's a beautiful one, and I think it says something about the kind of heart that one needs for Christian service, this kind of Christian service, to see those people whom you serve as the real treasures of the church. Some people think that Greek word diakonia comes from 2 words, dia, which means through, and konos, which means dust. And the people who do diakonia go through the dust to where the lowly people are whom God would lift up. Those who do diakonia are the ones who work close to the ground among the grassroots to be servants and advocate. Liturgically, and if you've been here for a Sunday Eucharist service, you see it, the assisting minister, which is traditionally in the liturgy is the deacon role, wears a diagonal stole, the stole that goes across this way, really to symbolize that being girded, Jesus taking the towel and girding himself, tying it aside to get his robes out of the way so that he could do the foot washing, to tie aside, to get out of the way whatever would encumber them for easy movement and flexibility for that kind of service on bended knee that's needed. This kind of servanthood, I think we talked about, it is hard work, humble service, responding to real personal need, and often takes people where they would rather not go, and doing touching parts of humanity that they would rather not see, and feeling compassion and kinship with people who are easiest to ignore or forget. And I would just like to hold up for you several pictures or examples of this kind of servanthood. She's not bothering me.
Is she bothering you guys?
No.
Okay. No. All right. I just want to make sure here.
That's fine.
Sometimes as a parent,
it's probably louder to you than to anyone else.
Or not loud at all. That's what I'm concerned about.
It's not as long as everybody's okay with that. Well, when I think of this picture of servanthood, this foot washing, I think of a couple of deaconesses from my own community of deaconesses. One of them is a parish nurse. And I recall that one of the things that she said is that they have a number of elderly people in their congregation, and one of the things that's very hard for them to do is to cut their toenails. And so what they do once a month at their church is they fix a little private space in the narthex where people can come in and have the parish nurse and her assistants cut toenails and tend to their feet. Another that is a little bit more figurative perhaps is a deaconess who has worked the whole 27 years that she's been a deaconess as a chaplain at Lincoln State Hospital and Developmental Center in Illinois, where she works with people who have multiple disabilities, physical and mental. And you know that the only people who are kept in those sorts of institutions are really the people who have the greatest need and the least kind of ability to care for themselves. And she's been a person who's always been ready to work with the people that the rest of the staff have given up on. And that she really is, works with many people who can barely communicate, and she's able to see beauty in them and really to embody Christ's love for them, even when they're unable to understand words, she's able to communicate with them. I think of some of the diaconal workers I visited a number of years ago in Kingston, Jamaica, who gathered the poorest of the poor who were dying on the streets of the city and brought them to a hospice that they had created, a hospitable place that they had made in an old warehouse in the middle of the city. And there they tended those people during the last days of their lives. And of course, they washed their feet and lots of other body parts that were dirty and infected and infested, so that these people could have a sense of dignity and love and care in the last days. What struck me when we visited was how welcoming the people that they cared for were. That here these people were dying and they knew it. And yet when we walked in, I mean, it was like they welcomed us into their space. And we're very interested in what we were about and what we were doing. I think of the many Stephen ministers that I know in congregations. Are any of you Stephen ministers, or do you know what that is? It's, are you a Stephen
I'm
minister?
I'm not, but my husband is.
Okay. You want to say a little bit about it?
What? Go ahead.
Okay.
That would be a no.
That would be a no.
Probably couldn't do it as well as anything.
Well, it's a program whereby lay people are trained in congregations really to do what we've often called pastoral care. And they work with people who have special needs in congregation or sometimes community, people who are ill, dying, people who are bereaved, depressed, people who just need a little extra care. I think of the countless people, I don't know what, I mean, is that sort of
Yeah, I think the emphasis is caring mm-hmm. and listening. Mm-hmm. They really develop listening skills mm-hmm. because that's what
people need
yeah.
and what they don't get enough of. Yeah. I think of people, some of whom I can call by name and many others that I can't, who are prepared to be the arms of the body of Christ around people with AIDS, crack babies, street people, people who are ever present in our communities who, because of their life situations or their personalities, are hardest to love. The kind of blistered, becorned parts of humanity. Are there people that come to your mind as that kind of servant? People that you know?
People, I don't know people, but I live in Seattle, and every now and then I see a big article on what they're doing for in AIDS hospitals and things like uh-huh. that. And I always think, oh, I just really admire somebody who would go and work with those people.
Mm-hmm.
Not only because of the disease they carry, but they're surrounded by death.
Mm-hmm.
And I always admire those people, and same with people who are working with the hospice program.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, sometimes I wish I had that strength to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really takes a special person mm-hmm. to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it does. Catherine, who did the Helen Keller, were some of you here for that? She's a UCC, United Church of Christ minister, and is part-time a part of her job is as a hospice chaplain. She was talking a little bit about that this morning in Stephanie Paulsell's session on honoring the body. Yeah, it's a very special person, I think, mm-hmm. who can do that.
Mm-hmm. I did the clinical pastoral education with the homeless last semester. I'm going to sit there. And it is really hard. It's really, really difficult. I felt like really inadequate to go out and just start talking to anybody sitting on the street. I felt a lot better when I worked in the homeless. I worked in the clothing ministry because I felt like they were coherent enough to come in to know that they at least needed to know. But then to talk to them was just fine. But it's kind of value system just mm-hmm. goes away.
Mm-hmm. I spent a week in Portland last month with the Mennonite Church, and their whole basis for service. And we spent, our youth group spent a week down there serving the homeless people down mm-hmm. there. And the director of the church we stayed at, the organization, is just dedicated to serving people mm-hmm. and serving Christ. Mm-hmm. My kids learned a lot from him down there that week. They really know how to serve mm-hmm. and why you can serve. A lot of people serve to make themselves feel better. Mm-hmm. But that's not why they're there to serve, to make them feel better.
Yeah, if we take our cue from the John 13, Jesus knew that he had come from God and was going back to God, and that mm-hmm. was the identity out of which he served. I suppose there are some people who serve who do this because they don't think they're worth anything more. And so that there are people who serve because they think that's all they're. I mean, they do it out of a sense of a lack of a sense of themselves rather than out of an identity that says, because of what Christ has done for me, I'm ready to do this for others. How are there other ways that you see yourself or others that you know doing this kind of thing?
I get really frustrated with myself because people who make you uncomfortable, I get so mad that I can't be more generous. Mm-hmm. And why do I feel uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen that here because of course at Holden you meet many different kind of people and mm-hmm. I think an example that I can say is last week that I think that boy's name was Eric,
yes.
Mm-hmm. I feel so, like, you know, he would just say what was on his mind mm-hmm. or walk where he wanted to walk if it was on stage during a quiet flute performance. And a lot of times I didn't mind it, but I feel uncomfortable on other people's behalf at night. And then I get so mad that, you know, I don't know how I feel. If I wish that he wasn't there, you know, if he just mm-hmm. was. And then I think, gosh, his mom, his family, or others like him, they can't, you know, walk away like I can. And then I feel guilty. So I don't know. And I know that it is so hard, like you said, and I see that it takes, like, so much strength, so much love and generosity. And I wish I had more of that.
Are there moments when you feel like you do have that?
Yeah, I am. I have it. I know a specific. I guess. I always like when I was in school, like junior high. So a while longer. I'm a senior in college now, so it's been a little while. But I was a definite underdog. Definite underdog. And that's where I put my heart to, like, kids. I work in Narnia here, and, like, kids who are picked on or ignored. And that's where I think my heart goes. But I wish I could put it beyond that to people who have. So I still get frustrated with myself. That's. And I've kind of noticed that since I've been here, and I just kind of would like to work on that, I guess, and feel more comfortable. Or
don't beat yourself up too much, because it is very hard to work with, you know, the people on the street.
Yeah.
And because, you know, like you said, they're very dirty. And, but. And what I found for myself is, looking at them on the street, it's almost impossible for me to go up and talk to them. But once you do, we spent a week on the streets of Portland, and they're not that different from you and from me. And that's what's helped me to make it easier for myself. Because, it's incredibly painful and hard to accept them or to even talk to them. To serve them. But once you start doing it, it becomes easier. And you find out who they are. I talked to a guy on the street. He was living on the streets of Portland, and he grew up in a Lutheran church in Alaska. Mom still plays the organ in Alaska. Dad was on the council there still. And he had a great job as an accountant for the school district in Alaska. Lost it all, and now he's on the street. Why is he there and I'm not? And so it's, you find out that these people are real people, and it makes it a lot easier for me to, you know, to be a servant to them. It makes me a lot more grateful for what I've got.
Sometimes I think it is the very fact that there's not so much difference between them and me that makes it so very frightening.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes it easy. I mean, it's very tempting just to turn one's back on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met a girl who said, I was talking to one of the other seminarians in that clothing ministry, and I said, well, I'm going to take systematic theology. So one of the homeless people said, oh, I took systematic theology, you know, blah, blah, blah. I read the Dead Sea Scrolls. They were really neat. And what I thought was neat about the youth where we were is that they didn't go to school, but they read like crazy. They traded books all the time, and they just talk about books. What I found is that it's like they really have strong knowledge in certain areas, and it's humbling to me the amount of knowledge they may have in one particular area, but it's kind of like the practical part of life is what escapes them. But I felt like with some of it was dangerous. That's what I meant about going out and just, you know, I mean, because some of the kids would talk about sleeping, you know, the conditions of sleeping at night, and it was, I mean, they were really tired because they hadn't slept all night because of what was going on.
The people out there, they go find a place to hide. They don't go to bed, they go find a place to hide. And when you think about it like that, it puts it into some different terms. And
another thing,
sleep now.
Another thing about feet with the homeless is they have to be really careful with their feet, because getting socks is so difficult. We never, ever, ever have those socks. And, you know, so they, you know, they talk about their feet getting.
A lot of them have a lot of foot problems.
Right. It's just illnesses.
I think probably, I mean, all of us have people that it's really hard for us to be around, you know, one of the things that Stephanie said last Monday night in her homily was that when we wash feet, we see, we get a glimpse of people as Jesus sees them. You know, and I think that's part of what this John 13 is talking about, and that the truth is that none of us as human beings ever see anyone fully as Jesus sees them. But to get those kinds of glimpses, it can be a real gift to us, and that, I think, helps us, causes us to be more generous then the next time. But I guess I commend you for struggling about that. I mean, a lot of people would not, you know, would just dismiss it.
Yeah. I don't like doing it too anymore.
Yeah.
We're talking about foot washing.
Yes.
And different ways that people, either we ourselves or people that we know, are engaged in foot washing, either literally or figuratively. Mothers do a lot of foot washing, right?
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
I have a friend who was going to a Seventh-day Adventist church for a while. They had communion very rarely, I think it was only twice or four times a year. But they had a foot washing ceremony every time they had communion.
Uh-huh.
And I always thought that was kind of a nice tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some people who practice that regularly, and in some places it's foot washing is practiced on Monday, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of places, it's not done liturgically at all. I'd like to give us enough time to actually wash feet if some of you would like to do that. Would anybody like to do that? You would? Others of you? Okay. Would you?
Okay.
Great. I have the Creekside room sort of set up for that. Next door, and I would like to set the scene just a little bit again to remind you of what it is that Stephanie said in her homily last week about when we wash feet, we have an opportunity to see another person as Jesus sees them. I was last fall in Geneva, Switzerland, at the Central Committee meeting of the World Council of Churches, where there were 300 people from all over the world there in a meeting for a week. And one of the speakers was Jean Vanier. Is that a name that's familiar with anyone? To anyone? He was the founder of the L'Arche community in France, and then there are others now in North America here. He describes the communities this way, where people with disabilities and their assistants live together. And he talked about his own experience in living with people who had disabilities, and he talked particularly about one resident, one friend of his, Andre, who he said didn't really want anything that most of the rest of us spend our whole lives trying to get. Did not want wealth, did not want knowledge, did not want honor, didn't want fame. But what he wanted was a friend. He wanted, his question was, do you love me? And then he talked about how important to this man touch was, and that foot washing really is an opportunity to touch, to communicate that love in a way that you cannot do in any other way. And then Vanier invited this 300 this meeting full of 300 people to go into the next room where there were foot washing stations set up, much like what we have next door, and invited us to wash each other's feet. It was really a beautiful sight to see women and men from all over the world, from presiding bishops to youth volunteers, all washing each other's feet. And it was clear to me that for some of those people who worked together and knew, had known each other and had really had conflict with each other, that it was also a reconciling moment for them to be able to serve each other in that way. So if you would like to join in the foot washing, I think what we'll do is go ahead and go next door, since it's all set up. There really would be room to do it in here, but I have the water and the towels and everything there. And what we have are four chairs together, and I'd just like you to fill those spaces and to wash each other's feet, and to just do that in turn. And maybe we'll have a few minutes to talk about, to reflect on that afterwards. So I think you can probably stop the tape now because you won't be able to hear us washing feet. Do some of you know that the Taizé chant, Ubi Caritas? Do you, some of you? It goes like this. It's a very simple, I should have brought the tape. Ubi Caritas et amor. Ubi caritas Deus ilibies. Where charity and love are, there is God. And that's from that same account in John where Jesus washed feet, also talks about giving a new commandment. That's Latin, and it comes from the Taizé community in France. Community, an ecumenical community of reconciliation. And actually we use from time, we've used some of the Taizé music here. I don't think we've used that particularly.
It's in With One Voice.
It's in With One Voice. So why don't we just kind of sing that and go next door and wash feet.
Ubi caritas Deus.